It is Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, Canuck Central for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. Game's currently ongoing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's time for the goal horn. The goal horn is brought to you by Rewind Beer Company. Find their big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. The Leafs and Bruins trading goals here in the first period. Morgan Geeky scores on the power play, yet another power play goal for the Bruins at 10:18 of the first, and just 14 seconds later, Max Domi from Austin Matthews responds, and it's 1-1 back at All Square.
I mean, the Bruins blew a 3-1 lead last year against Florida.
Yeah,
but it's kind of a must-win game for for Toronto. I don't think they can come back from being down, 2-0.
Well, if you've been watching any of this series and you've seen the way the Leafs' penalty kill works, it's reminiscent of the old Canucks penalty kill, which is not a good thing, if I do say so myself.
Not great.
Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Let's bring in our next guest, the legend himself. It is Don Taylor, Donnie and Dolly from 10 to Noon on Czech TV, and he is a presentation of Besant Motors. Thanks for this, Donnie. How are you?
Very good, guys. Doing well.
Have you come down from the big game last night? It was a pretty special atmosphere at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, it really was, and it's almost hard to believe that there's still some playoff hockey left. It was almost like a peak last night. It was, the whole thing with the towel and the statue, and what was going on in North Delta and Surrey, and just it was just really special. And I've got teenage boys now, and one of them was downtown last night, and just came back glowing. And man, it was just fun. It was, let's be honest here, a lot of the emotion was pent up. People talk about how it was 9 years in the making. It was more than that.
Yeah.
People forget that, 2015 was a dud of a series. And, Sat, you and I know that. We were at all yes. the games, including the ones in Calgary. And,
yeah.
2013, same thing, not great. 2012, against L.A. We all know the story. It's been since 2011. And to have that sort of feeling in town, and it's just game one, and it's just win number one, and Lord knows what can happen from here.
Well, and like Mark in the Sea to Sky texted this in and said, that wasn't a win, that was an exorcism. And I think it really was in so many different ways. And it also kind of signified hope and, hey, what this can be like for not only the players, but also the fans, if this team is for real. And it wasn't a perfect game, but I thought the Canucks did rise to the occasion last night.
Yeah, and Rick Tocchet talked about that in the post game, and so did JT Miller and Quinn Hughes, that no, it wasn't a perfect game, and that's fine. Very rarely do you play the perfect game, but you have to be mature enough to realize that, and that it's okay to be down one. It's okay to be down one, going into a third period. Just keep plugging away. Don't try to do everything yourself, and just stick to the system, play smart hockey, and be patient. Be patient and mature, and they talked about that a lot. And, man, I haven't heard a lot of, Canuck teams, say things like that through the years, and it's, you have to have the talent, obviously, but it's at the very least very promising for a lot of Vancouver fans.
Well, it's when Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin made the bet on much of this roster that they could turn it around, that a better, a more structured environment and changing the culture would get a lot of these players on a different page and have the team playing the kind of hockey that helps you win games at this time of year. I was certainly skeptical, Donnie, just because the track record had said, these guys are who they are. They only play on the offensive side of the puck, and seeing the 180 that they've taken to play in all three zones for much of this roster. I mean, still sometimes, I'm kind of shocked that this core group of players has been able to turn it around to the extent that they have.
Well, and just think about how people, feel that have been around for a long, long time. It's just hard to believe because it's the Canucks. And again, game one, win one, long way to go. And people have been burned in this town for so long, or at least they've been burned in Canuck Nation for so long, in this province for so long, that it is just hard to believe. even if somebody comes in that's so trusted, experienced, and well-decorated as Jim Rutherford, and to some extent, Patrick Kalvin and Rick Tocchet, it's just hard to believe. But so far, so good. They just seem right, and that's really rare in this town.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it. And the thing that you want to see them do is grow from this, right? Can they build on it and really show the true maturity of, hey, taking game two as well? And what an incredible opportunity now. I mean, and I'm not saying it's going to be a short series or anything here, but you win that first game, you take care of business here in game two. The position you put yourself in going to Nashville, and you might have a chance to not go back to Nashville out of those first two games. I mean, the fact of winning the first game can't be understated in terms of the importance, as long as you take advantage of it in game two.
Yeah, and I think the way too that it came about, and that Nashville played well, and I think they I mean, I don't know how they feel today about, you know, blowing a lead in the third period and giving up two goals in 12 seconds, but the fact that, you know, that Nashville played well and it wasn't good enough against the really, you know, sturdy Canuck team, I think that, you know, you asked Rick talking, would he prefer that or a blowout? I bet he'd prefer that. Just a real tough, you know, real playoff win, something a real character win, and with, you know, the home crowd on the team side like it hasn't been in so long. I bet he loved that game last night, even though it wasn't 7-0 or 8-0 or even 5-1. It was just, there's just something about that win that seemed really, really special. It could all go away in 24 hours. I get that, but I'm sure he's feeling pretty good right now.
You know, a lot of the things that maybe need to improve as the series goes on, despite the game one win, are things that we've talked about for the last few weeks and months, Donnie. And one of those things is the power play, right? The Canucks lose the special teams battle technically last night, but it doesn't matter because they win the 5-on-5 battle. But over the course of a series, they're going to need that power play to generate a little bit more than they did last night, aren't they?
They are. I know he talked last night about off the power play for a second, but, you know, he liked. I know they gave up the goal to O'Reilly, but he was pretty happy with the fact that they kept taking penalties after that goal, and then were able to get through that because of their PK. So from a special teams point of view, from a PK point of view, I think he was pretty happy, other than the O'Reilly goal. And of course, you know, I'm sure a lot of people would argue that maybe, you know, Luke Evangelista might have something to do with that O'Reilly goal. No, I know Thatcher Demko would agree with that. And as for the power play, notice they did a couple of different things. They had Quinn Hughes down low a couple of times on their power play. I think that there's a good chance that'll come. I mean, there's always room for improvement. I mean, you know, look, I don't know what your inbox has been like today, but ours today, people did mention the power play, and a lot of people weren't happy with the way Elias Pettersson played. And I think he can, you know, I still think there's a hell of a hockey player there. Everybody knows that. And, you know, the fact that they can win like that and not get a ton of contribution from him might actually be promising.
Well, you know, I do think there's a lot more Pettersson can bring, and we were talking about him in the first segment too, and I went back watching the game, watching each of his shifts, and yeah, obviously he can be better, but I didn't find him to be really bad. I don't think anybody was really bad for the Canucks last night, and that's a big reason why they were able to come back and win that game. But it was interesting listening to the coach talk about how oftentimes the wingers need to help the centers out, especially on that line. And, you know, with Hoglander and Lafferty, I thought those guys had a hard time connecting play, coming up with pucks on the forecheck, and that's kind of been their forte. So I think you're absolutely right. Like, if they give that trio another chance, there is a far better game there for all three players, I think, to be had in game two.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, Hoglander, his effort level was there. And, you know, Lafferty obviously had trouble on the faceoff and on the one goal for Nashville. I think there's more there. And some people might argue that, well, you know, Pettersson's not playing with world beaters, you know, with difference makers. But, you know, great players are supposed to make, within reason, the players around them better. Hoglander's had a pretty good year. I just expect more. We had John Garrett on our postgame show last night, and he said the one thing is Pettersson's not creating like he normally does. So you can look for that as the series moves on.
The part of this team that I think we're all still, or one of the parts of this team that we're all still, you know, kind of surprised at how much success they've had is the decor. And beyond Hughes and Hronek, I thought, Ian Cole had a great game. Zadorov and Myers were both pretty physical. Even Carson Soucy had some good moments too last night. But the turnaround of the D-core is massive, and I thought they proved to be better than the depth on Nashville's D beyond McDonough and Josi, and I think that's a big advantage that the Canucks have in this series.
I'll bet that, you know, I know, and we all know what, you know, the kind of game Dakota Joshua had. You know, we all know how good Lindholm was last night, probably his best game as a Canuck. But I think deep, and JT Miller was really good as well. I thought Besser had a quiet way, had a good game. He let all the forwards in ice time. But I think deep down, I'll bet Rick Tocchet was most happy with what happened with his blue line core. If you look at the ice time, you know, Quinn Hughes, I think he played 20 to 21 minutes, and then everybody else was around 17 and a half to 20 minutes. It was really evenly distributed. And I think the thing that made Tocchet probably the happiest, I would think, is just that what he talked about in that game. I know I bring this up a lot, guys. In that late regular season game last year against Las Vegas, when he glowed about the Golden Knights' big, kind of tough, you know, somewhat mobile defense, difficult to play against. He just went on and on about them, and you could tell he wanted that type of defense. And it seems like, at the very least, they're getting there, or that they took a big step last night. And in that type of hockey, that's where that size really, really matters. And you complement that with two such good defensemen in Hironic and especially Hughes. That's something special. But I wonder if Tocchet is a little bit surprised and really, really happy about how quickly the Canucks have moved on that, how the front office has moved on getting defensemen like that. I mean, you know what it's like. I don't care what sport you play, you know, hockey, soccer, basketball. When you're going up against behemoths like that, when you're going up against a wall like that, that's tough. And visually, it's tough to go against, and it really seemed effective last night.
Well, yeah, and it's painful, right? Like having to get hit by those guys constantly is probably not all that fun. And I know for a long time that the core that's been around here, and look, they've turned over the roster quite a bit. But a big question has long been, is the team physical enough? Are they soft? Yeah. Are they easy to get bullied? You know, maybe that's been part of the narrative around this team. I don't think that's the case anymore, Donnie. Like they've sort of taken on their head coach's mindset as a player, and they definitely don't shy away from the physicality of the game.
Yeah, the early hit by Zadorov, where he sent one of the Predators flying, really set a tone. Myers has been here a long time. I think he's taken his physical game to another level. You mentioned Ian Cole. He certainly plays that way, and all that experience. But there's, you get the feeling that this is a team that you're right. It's different. They're not dropping the gloves like teams used to. But there's a sense that they're not going to be pushed around. And I think it begins with that D core, and well, hold on. It begins with the head coach, and then seeps down to the D core. It seems really, really special, and let's be honest, really rare in the recent history of the franchise. In the history of this franchise, it's been pretty impressive. One game, but so far so good.
Yeah, I mean, and we didn't even talk about Demko, who made that spectacular save on his former teammate Anthony Beauvillier in the first period coming across. And I mean, who knows what the vibe's like, you know, if that goal goes in early in that first period. But JT Miller and his physicality, we were kind of joking about the way he was going after guys. And there were a couple of hits he just narrowly missed, and those guys may have been sent out of the series if he connected on them. The level of ferocity in his game was pretty incredible last night, wasn't it?
We're using those big words against that. I don't know if I can handle this, but let me try. His first shift, I remember making notes last night, you know, as we're getting ready for our show, and just making notes last night and saying, hey, you guys, we got to, you know, we have to show visuals of what Miller did in the, you know, on the very first shift. I don't think we ever did. We're not that good. But he was just, I thought he really set a tone. Now the game settled down after that, and Nashville ended up taking a lead, but I just thought right off the bat he was just so good with, you know, the king of the reverse hit, and And I just thought he really, really set a tone for what the forwards were doing up front. And just he's a real leader, and he leads through physicality. And we talked about the toughness on the blue line. If there is indeed toughness up front, it starts with him.
What do you see as a key for the next game here for the Canucks?
Well, they got to take another level, and let's go back to Elias Pettersson. I don't care what anybody says. I'll bring up the money. That's where they can get. That's a player who's going to be making $11.6 a year next year. And I know it's next year, but people are talking about it. It is a factor. That's where they can get better. Is that, you know, number 40 and that line can do something. They are capable of it, and that's where they can. I feel they can get better.
Hey, Donnie, we really appreciate the time. The buzz is back in the city. Maybe we'll see some more car flags as well.
Okay, well, hey, I know there's a lot of car flags out there. I see them, but most of all, my family has tried to put my kids, my boys, and my wife, they can't find any anywhere. You know, they've tried everywhere. So, obviously, that to me, that's a pretty good sign that the buzz is there.
Donnie, you're the best. Thanks for this.
Anytime, guys. Lots of fun.
There's Don Taylor. On Sports at 650, brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles and where the players go. We're in the Kintech studio. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Let's get to it. Another goal horn. The Boston Bruins have retaken the lead on the Toronto Maple Leafs. David Pastrnak, his first of the postseason, with 8 seconds remaining in the first period from Pavel Zacha and Charlie McAvoy. So the Boston Bruins taking a lead into the second frame over the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's Canucks Central, Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. So, you know, you heard it from Donnie there too, and it's, you know, the longer this goes on, the more Pettersson is going to be a conversation point, right? Like, he's just such an integral part of the team. He signed the big contract this year, and so the expectations are through the roof. And unless you see, feels like for a lot of fans, unless they see him score a goal every single game, they're not going to be happy with his performance. And that's just at times it feels like an unrealistic level of expectation. At times, some of the criticism has been fair on Pettersson's game, but it's never balanced, it feels like.
Yeah, no, it's not. And I think that's kind of been part of the issue. And, you know, somebody texted in here and said, the problem with PD is he's not great. He's not bad. He's just meh. It's time to step up. Burnaby Kirby. And I don't think he's wrong, right? This overall sentiment on it. I do think it's kind of like JT last year as well, that as soon as a player is at a lower end of his play, the quick reaction is he's not worth the contract. It's going to be a problem. And as soon as he's good, it's going to be like, well, now he's worth it. And it's like, you kind of have to go through the ups and downs with players, and just because he's going through a moment where he's not at his best doesn't mean he won't long term. Now, if you don't believe in the player, you'll never believe that he will, right?
Yes.
If you believe in the player, you think he'll bounce back. But I do think if the Canucks do go a bit farther here, then they're going to need Pettersson to be able to get going, right? And I think there is something in his game. Like, I don't think he's looked like him himself, but I don't think his game is that far off from really finding itself. And I thought if he would have, you know, scored on one of the chances he had last night, does he have more confidence going into game two? Does he start getting on a bit of a roll? And maybe you're kind of wishful in putting it that way, but that's kind of what you're hoping for, right? And I do think from what I saw last night, there is more there. Like, it wasn't like, hey, those guys working hard, going in the right spot and not getting it done, getting out-muscled all the time. Like, I didn't find that Pettersson was getting out-muscled. He was winning plenty of puck battles, coming up with pucks, making good plays. Sure, he fell down a couple times, but I didn't find that he was overwhelmed or outmatched out on the ice.
Well, Patrick Alvin yesterday told us, and if you missed the interview that we did during the pregame show yesterday, you can find it available on Podcatcher with the Canucks general manager ahead of game one. Still a lot of relevant info in there, but he's pretty positive at where Pettersson's game is and thinks it's only a matter of time before he essentially gets back to the point production we're used to seeing out of Elias Pettersson. And even when asked about it today, you know, I don't think Rick Tocchet was overly critical of Pettersson's game. It was more just a concession that, yes, they need more out of Elias Pettersson, and he understands they're going to need more at some point out of Elias Pettersson. But there was a moment where he stopped short of saying, I think Pettersson's going to have a really good game too. And usually his hunches are pretty good, Coach Rick Tocchet. But even just being there at the news conference, like it felt as though Tocchet feels Pettersson is close to finding his next level.
I honestly, one of my takes for tomorrow was going to be like, hey, I think Pettersson's going to have a good game.
Yeah.
You know, like based on how he played last night, based on the room for improvement you would imagine he would have, and also his wingers. Like, hey, you know, I'm critical of how Lafferty and Hoglander played. And I think Donnie's right. Hoglander had enthusiasm. He played hard. You know, he was battling out there. He just was not making a lot of smart decisions. You know, he was, the puck was blowing up on his stick a few times. There were a lot of times where he got the puck in the neutral zone. He's trying to make a play instead of just getting it north. You know, it's like you have to move the puck forward. You can't just, you know, get kind of.
He fell back into some old bad habits.
Yeah, and that's probably because of the adrenaline, right? And the overall vibe in the building just being at such a high level that, you know, everyone kind of reverted back to who they are maybe a little bit for that moment. But I do think Hoglander is going to be a lot better in game two. And if he is, I don't think a lot of those plays Pettersson made are going to die the way they did in game one.
No, a couple of texters said Mikheyev should be flipped back up with where Lafferty was. We saw that pretty much start to happen towards the end of last night's game anyhow. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the lineup adjustments the Canucks make for game two. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You are listening to Canuck Central.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drance.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
Back in on Canucks Central, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah will be live from Rogers Arena tomorrow for Game 2 between the Canucks and Nashville Predators. Also, maybe you'll see us on the concourse ahead of the game.
Ah, yes.
Doing the show live amongst the people. Although, if we like don't respond to you while you come up to the table, it's because we're probably talking on the air.
Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, I mean, we're not trust me, we're not trying to big time you.
We're not like that.
It's kind of like we can break character.
Yeah,
that's kind of what it is.
Not like our next guest. He's a real big timer. It's Shane O'Brien, former Vancouver Canuck. What's happening, Obes?
Not much, boys. Thanks for having me. I'll tell you what, a lot of people were either A, hungover for work today, or B, didn't even show up at all. I'm telling you that right now. There was a lot of drunk people in Vancouver last night, and I was loving it.
Man, the city was absolutely buzzing. It had to give you goosebumps seeing the Canucks come back in. It's been so long since there's been a playoff game here at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, you know what? It really did. And, you know, I don't miss playing very often. Every time playoff time comes around, there's a part of me that, you know, wishes I had one more chance to go out there and compete. But last night, I was extremely jealous of those boys. And, you know, my 2 years in Vancouver, we got to the second round both years. The place was absolutely electric. And last night, I think it might have even been better. I mean, the Canucks fans were hungry. You could see that. They were thirsty. Every time they showed the crowd, it was a beauty, from Vancouver, drinking a beer with a white towel. It was unbelievable. And you heard the boys after the game. They all loved it. It made a difference. So for Canucks fans, good on you and keep it rocking.
So, I mean, you had the experience playing as a Canuck in the playoffs, but also in 2011, you were a member of the Nashville Predators coming back and playing against your former team, the Kessler series, as everybody remembers it now. Yeah. But how difficult of a building was Rogers Arena to play against or play in as an opponent of the Canucks?
Yeah, it was unique for me because, like you said, the previous 2 years I was there and was on the right side of it. And obviously the Canucks fans were great to me when I was in Vancouver. But when I came back, I mean, first of all, I was probably an easy target, right, with all the off-ice stuff that went on throughout my career. So I heard a little bit of that. But honestly, I embraced when we went in there. And like you said, if it wasn't for Ryan Kessler, and I always said I loved having Kessler on my team and I hated playing against him. And that series, more than any series ever, he was the difference in the six games. And But I enjoyed it. I'd like to go back there. It was unique for me, but I'd much rather be a Canuck than going in there and playing against them in front of those fans.
Well, and it was really fascinating hearing from the players. Last night, Ian Cole was on with us on the post-game show, and he talked about how, you know, some guys had tears in their eyes on the warm-up. JT Miller said, I mean, it was one of the most special moments in his life. I mean, he singled out being married and the birth of his daughter as obviously ranking above that moment, but it wasn't too far off in terms of a special moment for him. And he said he had a new appreciation for this fan base and their passion, seeing what he saw last night. Like, I mean, it really does affect players, doesn't it, when you experience something like that for the first time?
Yeah, I love JT. I'll let him say having a kid, but not getting married is better than that. I can guarantee you know, I'm not married, but I wedding's fun, but that playoff hockey's way more fun than that. But listen, I love that guy. You could see how fired up he was to play. I mean, when they scored the goal to make it, what was it, 3-2 to go up by one, he hit one of his teammates on the bench with like a hard left. I was like,
poor Pew Suter, man. I was like, man, he might be hurt for the next game.
Yeah, I'm like, easy, buddy. It's this long series here. Don't take your own guys out. But no, I mean, you know, Canucks guys that have been there for the last few years, you know, we all know, whatever, 4 years ago in the bubble or whatever it was, they had a pretty decent run there, but they haven't got to experience the city and what it's like. And, you know, anytime I come up with you boys or if I talk to anybody from Vancouver, I try to stress, you know, how great it is and how cool it is to be a Vancouver Canuck in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And it was probably my best memories of playing in the NHL were my playoffs in Vancouver. So for these boys, I'm extremely jealous. It was unbelievable. And you can see how much it meant to these guys.
Obes, whenever we've had you on talking about JT Miller, you've never wavered on your opinion of the player and just how good he is. I mean, he gets over 100 points this year. He's buzzing last night. I think he threw 6 hits in the first 3 shifts he had in the game. And he's just, I mean, he's everything, right? Like, he's a rare combo of size, speed, and skill. And I'm not, even though he scored 100 points, I'm not sure he gets the credit that other star players around the league do.
Yeah, and you know what? He's making me look really good. If I have to be honest, I ever think he'd be a 100-point guy. I probably never thought he'd be a 100-point guy, but the thing I loved about him, and, you know, you brought up Ryan Kessler, and, you know, one thing I loved about Kess is he played hard every single night, and he practiced hard. And, you know, I remember coming to the rink some mornings and Kess being grumpy. I'm like, what do you got to be grumpy about? You're making whatever it was, $4 or $5 million, and you're playing 20 minutes a night, and everyone loves you. And that's just how he was. He practiced hard. He played hard. And when I watched JT Miller become a Canuck, it reminded me of that. He doesn't take nights off. He competes. He finishes checks. He's got an unbelievable shot. He has emotion that sometimes, yeah, he crosses the line sometimes. But I think Rick Tocchet's been unbelievable with helping him with that. And I will always take a guy that plays with emotion and sometimes goes over the line. But for me, Dano, it was his compete level, man. He plays hard every single shift.
Well, and the Canucks got so many contributions throughout their lineup last night too, and Elias Lindholm scored a goal, and it wasn't, you know, it hasn't been the easiest fit for him since being traded to Vancouver, got injured as well, but really seems to have found a home there playing with Garland and Joshua, and anybody who's been down the middle with those two guys is seemingly having a ton of success this season. But what are you seeing in their game and the way that line really was able to match O'Reilly but also create as much offense as they did?
Yeah, I think it's a great point by you. I thought that was a huge goal for Lindholm, right? He got traded there, and then, you know, God love Canada. There were some rumors swirling that they were going to, you know, trade him back to whoever. I was like, well, the guy just got there. He hasn't even moved into his place yet. Let's not trade him just yet. But I thought it was a big goal for him. Connor Garland is a kid who, I don't want to say continues to prove me wrong, but I just thought he was so undersized for his career that, you know, that wasn't going to be great for playoff time. He plays way bigger than he is. He gets low on his stick. He gets to the net. He takes hits. I love his game. And Dakota Joshua, he was my wild card for the Canucks heading into the playoffs. I thought he had to be a difference maker. I love this kid's game. He's big. He's strong. He can hit. He'll fight if he has to. He played unbelievable. But for me, Joshua's got to continue to be that guy and just be a playoff dog for the Canucks. But I love that line right now.
The way I see it, Obes, and it's if – if the Canucks continue to execute, if they play to their game plan, if they play to their strengths, there's only so much Nashville can do. They just I don't feel they've got the talent to match the Canucks when they're going at their highest gear. Do you see it that way as well, or do you think Nashville can make some noise here?
No, I do see it that well. And I thought that the Preds, and it's no disrespect to, you know, you guys know how much I love Ryan O'Reilly, and I love the city of Nashville. I just thought this was the best matchup for Vancouver in the first round because of what you just said, Dan. Like, I think the ceiling for the Preds can't get to the ceiling of the Vancouver Canucks. And listen, boys, I'm watching that game last night, and I think last time I was on with you guys, I talked about their size on the back end for the Canucks. You know, I had Joffrey Leupel, you know, here's a blast from the past, Bowl, and then some other guys texted me, man, the Canucks got some beef on the back end, eh? and last night, they looked big, they looked tough. And I think with the skill up front, it's only one game. Pedersen has some chances, but I'm still going to keep my eye on him. But with the skill they have up front, that size, and Thatcher Demko, I know it's only one game, fellas, but I thought they looked like a playoff team last night.
Yeah, they really did, right? And I thought one of the things that really stood out was like how big their defense is. And we knew, of course, right, since they've acquired Zadorov, Ian Cole, Carson Soucy, and the Hronek and Hughes being a pairing too. But those four guys especially were so hard to wade through. You could see how hard it was for Nashville to get in from that. You saw along the walls how physical they were. I mean, you were a big physical defenseman yourself. Over the course of a long series, how punishing is it and how challenging is it trying to go through a defense that has the behemoths like the Canucks back end does?
Yeah, that's, you know, I kind of prided myself on that when I played, and I always, you know, people ask me, I always thought I was a better playoff player than a regular season player, which probably isn't saying much about my regular season stats, eh, fellas, but I always prided myself in the playoffs because of what you just said. You know, it's a seven-game series. You play every other night. You know, a lot of times you get out there against the, you know, the same line over and over again. You know who you're going to matchups are going to be, and you know as much as you wear on them and give them a little cross-check here and finish your check there and maybe a little whack here. As the 2 weeks go on here and they continue to come into the rink and get on the plane and the bumps and bruises kind of start adding up. To me, honestly, boys, I truly believe that's the difference between winning and losing. That with goaltending, you got to stay healthy, but you got to make guys pay in the playoffs.
Yeah, and yesterday we heard Rick Tocchet, one of the great lines already, and if the Canucks go on a long run, I bet you see it on a couple of T-shirts. But one of his big lines from his presser the other day was, embrace the pain, whether that's blocking a shot or making taking a hit to make a play, getting in front of the net, getting your nose dirty if you're a forward in the blue paint, those kinds of things. Like Rick Tocchet, it feels like he coaches the way that he played, and the team is kind of, you know, I think in the past we might have said the Canucks weren't the most physical team, Obes, but they seem to have taken on their coach's mindset in that sense.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, Tocs, and I've got to know Tocs over the last couple of years. He's been great to us at Missing Curfew. And when he's on TNT, I used to text him through his telecast and he'd get back to me. And I knew he was going to have success. I didn't think they'd have, you know, this much success and win the Pacific Division this year, but I thought they'd be a playoff team. But, you know, the way he's handled himself in the Vancouver media, and I always loved the media in Vancouver, and I've always said this, a player, a coach, whoever, if you be yourself, you be honest, you play hard and coach hard, the media in Vancouver will be fair to you and respect you. And since Rick Tocchet's been in there, the way he's coached, the way he's handled himself in the media, the fans love him, the players love him, and I couldn't be happier for him because, like you said, he's an absolute beauty.
You know what I love about Tocchet is he's not afraid to, like, talk with us, you know,
yeah.
or it, you know, he's not afraid to maybe reveal some things about his game plan or things like this. He'll still hide, you know, maybe some roster decisions ahead of game times and stuff like that, like normal coaches do. But, you know, he's not afraid of conversing with the media. And I wouldn't say other coaches are afraid of that, but it feels like he's so comfortable in his own skin that he's not afraid to kind of share what he's thinking and how he views the game. And, you know, from us on the media side, like it makes it a lot easier for us to do our job and to have a little transparency and understanding how he's trying to coach the team and what they're trying to execute when they go out there every night.
Yeah, and I think if you asked him his time with TNT after, you know, when he was in between jobs, I think he realized that, you know, you can use the media as a positive thing and build relationships with you know, media guys. And in Vancouver, you know, there's so many guys that come into the rink and have a job to do. And, I mean, you can either, you know, be disrespectful to them or don't give them what they need, or you can try to build a relationship with them and be honest with them. And I think Tox has done a great job of being honest with all the media up there, answering the questions, not playing games with them. Yes, winning has helped. Now, if they were losing, it might have been a different Rick Tocchet, but they're not. They're winning. He's been himself. He's been awesome. He's been funny. And I think people in Vancouver, it's refreshing, and I think they respect it.
Before we let you go, zooming out of the Canucks and a series that's starting tonight between the Dallas Stars and the Vegas Golden Knights, and a player who is making a miraculous comeback for Game 1 is Mark Stone. I mean, has a lacerated spleen. We were made to believe that he was in really tough condition, and maybe he was, right? And he's made a miraculous recovery. He's back for Game 1. What do you make of this entire situation around Stone, LTIR, and him playing tonight? Because I know it's a real hot-button issue for a lot of fans that feel like Vegas is gaming the system.
Yeah, no, it is. And if you want to call it bad timing or maybe, you know, perfect timing for the Vegas Golden Knights, that, you know, Stone, you know, had a lacerated spleen. And from everything I've heard, fellas, it was legit. I mean, he was pretty banged up, and it opened up the cap space, as we all know, and they went out and got Hanifin, Mantha, and Thomas Hertl. So is it fair? I don't know. I know it's not against the rules. You got to give Kelly McCrimmon, George McPhee, Bill Foley a ton of credit for once again going out there and getting it done. But listen, they are the defending champs. You can't just turn it on and turn it off, though. They haven't played together. We'll see how it works out. Their goaltending, you know, their goal with Logan Thompson tonight, we'll see what he can do. Aiden Hill hasn't been very good since he came back. So as much as people are upset, let's see if they still have that mojo. But if they do have that mojo, I mean, look out. They're going to be a tough out again.
So how tough is it for NHLers to lose Arizona as part of the road circuit?
Yeah, no, it was, well, listen, boys, I had to play in Glendale when I was there. So I would be staying in Glendale, and this was before Ubers. I'd have to take a cab to Scottsdale, stay in Scottsdale for too long, get a cab all the way back to Glendale. So as much as I loved it, it was always like, this is kind of painful going back and forth. But you know what? For the fans of Arizona, it sucks. Yeah. For the guys that played there, it's a great place to live. I'm sure you guys have both been down to Scottsdale and seen how great of a place it is. It's unfortunate, but the time was now. I mean, listen, Ryan Smith, deep pockets, young, hungry owner that wants to put some money in this team. I mean, they were playing at the Mullet Boys. It's just they couldn't do it any longer. It sucks, but I think in the long run, it'll be a great thing for the organization.
Obes, you're the best. Always great going down memory lane. We're going to see you up in Vancouver soon if this run goes on for a while?
Yeah. I could make her up for the first round, but if the Canucks beat the Preds, which I predicted they will, me and the Updog will be up there for the second round. So like I said last time, if anybody has tickets, hit me up because I need some. I'll pay for them. I just need some. I don't know where I can get them anymore up there. I don't have any connections anymore, boys.
Yeah, well, we'll figure it out. We'll get you situated here, Obes. Thanks. Thanks for this as always, pal.
Hey, you guys are fun. Thanks, boys.
There he is. One of the best guys in the biz. It is... Shane O'Brien was an absolute beautician when he played and continues to be an absolute beautician even today. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. You are listening to Canuck Central. Let's do the goal horn. The New York Islanders getting on the board first over the Carolina Hurricanes. Kyle Palmieri with the goal to put them up on the Hurricanes. So it's 1-0 there for the New York Islanders. Goal horn brought to you by Rewind Beer Company. Find their big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. So you look at what's gone on around the league and some of these playoffs, Sat. The home team has won every single game so far, which is pretty surprising given that home ice advantage hasn't really been a thing the last couple of years. It's split down the middle. I heard a stat today that, you know, home teams and road teams are 500 in the NHL playoffs over the last 10 years. So
sounds about right.
Split right down the middle. Could not be split any more than it has been. Canucks took advantage of game one last night. We're going to see Nashville try to, you know, make some adjustments. It was still close, right? They had the lead in the third period. Could have very easily won that game. Thatcher Demko had to make that massive save on Anthony Beauvillier in the first. You know Nashville is going to be all piss and vinegar to try and tie this series up going back to Nashville for the games 3 and 4.
They understand the predicament they'd be in going down 0-2.
Yeah.
I know players always talk about afterwards, hey, we're not done. We're in the series. You say all the right things, but you talk to players after the fact and you're like, you know, it's psychologically difficult. You know, you don't want to be put in that spot. So
because you lose one more game, you're on the brink, right?
Yeah. And, you know, you're probably not coming back from 3-0.
Yeah.
And you just see how difficult it is. Now you're like, we got to win both games. It's easy to get ahead of yourself and look at anytime you have a challenge in front of you that's a big one. You're not just looking at the moment. You're looking at, yeah, even if I figure out today, How am I going to figure out tomorrow? What about the day after? You know, and when you start in your day-to-day life, anytime you have something like that going on, now imagine that being brink of elimination in the playoffs, right? So yes, they're going to be playing with a lot of desperation. But I actually think if the Canucks play their game and they play with more desperation, they can play into the Canucks' hands. The only thing is the Canucks have to match it.
Yeah.
You know, there can't be an emotional letdown from last night. And as magical and incredible as last night was, you have to build on it.
Yeah.
And you have to learn to be able to raise that level again. Now, I'm assuming the atmosphere is going to be just as electric.
Mm-hmm.
There are fans who had FOMO who weren't there for game one that are going in game two, and they can't wait to be part of what they watched in game one.
Well, and it was a talking point that it wasn't completely sold out, right? Like, didn't the Canucks send out a message to season ticket holders an hour before the game or something like that?
I didn't see what it was like, but even so, I checked the tickets. There's like maybe 24 tickets available before the game. So I'm sure they got sold. If not, we're maybe talking about 10 tickets maybe that weren't sold. Now, verified resale, those are available, but those tickets are already sold. They're resale. But in terms of actual standard tickets, when I checked before the game an hour or so to go, there weren't that many. So now, though, because a lot of fans have tickets for one game, not the other, will that be enough to have the Canucks have the same level they had in game one? And that's what they need to have. If they have that, but also manage their emotions a little bit better and maybe not chase as much as they did in the first, play with a bit more discipline, then they should be taking care of business. You know, like, if the Canucks do their thing, you saw it last night, this is a team the Canucks are very capable of beating.
It's it is really interesting in, you know, the whole ticket sales thing. I think if you look at Lakers tickets in the playoffs, even Knicks tickets in the playoffs, they're not completely sold out either. So I don't think this is just a Vancouver thing, you know, in the economic times that we live in. But also, now that we have that first game, there's going to be a little bit of FOMO going through the city and people wanting to be a part of the incredible atmosphere that is happening at Rogers Arena. There's, you know, as Obi said there, there's only a certain level Nashville can get to. And you really felt it last night. Like, if they didn't have O'Reilly going, or who was their biggest threat on the ice? Like, yeah, they created some chances, but outside of Forsberg and O'Reilly, like, if somebody comes bearing in down on Thatcher Demko, like, I'm taking Demko to win that battle most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is. Yes, they're ahead of schedule in their retool, rebuild sort of thing. They have played incredibly well to get to the spot that they're in. But again, as we said at the start of the series, and we continue to say now, as long as the Canucks play their game and they execute, they shouldn't have a problem in this series. And guarding against Nashville, trying to have their quick strike offense going, I think the Canucks did a fairly good job of that last night. Like, it's going to be a continued storyline through the series that they slow down Nashville in those quick strike chances.
They had a few chances later in the game too, a couple, right? They were kind of pushing. There were some moments, but I thought their two best chances actually came in the first period. The one was the Beauvillier chance,
yes,
of course, right? And Demko makes a miraculous save coming across and robbing him. And
then Beauvillier still looking very much like Anthony Beauvillier.
Yeah, having a hard time scoring goals, right? That Beauvillier for the Islanders, who had that nice playoff run some years back, is
long gone.
Long gone. I'm not sure he's going back.
Like, his first few games in Vancouver. Like, that guy seems like a different person.
Yeah, I don't know if he doesn't exist anymore. I don't know what happened to the poor guy. Maybe he finds it next season somewhere. But he couldn't finish that playoff. Then actually, one of their defensemen, Stasny, had a great chance off a rebound net front, and Demko made the save. But outside of that, there wasn't a ton of rush chances. And to the point you made, they blew the zone a lot. They had guys that got behind the Canucks defense. They were trying to hit them with the stretch passes, but the Canucks did a good job of picking those off. They had a couple guys in the neutral zone defending those areas well. So there was a lot there that the Canucks can still take advantage of. And you're right, I didn't find that Nashville was all that dangerous. Now, in a playoff game, when there's intensity, every shift matters. Anytime a team's holding onto a puck and cycling it, it creates nervousness from fans, right? So you maybe feel like you're under duress and more stress because every shot feels so much more dangerous and pronounced in the playoffs. But in terms of actual quality looks, Nashville didn't have a ton last night.
No, and it's tough to generate on the Canucks. We've seen that time and time again as they've developed their defensive game all season long. All right, coming up, we're going to get into more of the storylines around the Stanley Cup playoffs. Before we do that, the goal horn. An upset in the works. The goal horn brought to you by Rewind Beer Company. Find their big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. Bo Horvat, former Vancouver Canuck, getting on the score sheet, getting his playoff vibes going. His first of the postseason from Matthew Barzal and Casey Cizikas with 15 seconds remaining in the first period to give the New York Islanders a 2-0 lead heading into the second period. I don't know why I'm saying it like that. I felt it. That's really all that it was.
Riccio goes by pure vibes.
I'm reminiscing about John Sterling, even though I sounded nothing like John Sterling in that moment, and he has nothing to do with the New York Islanders either. So
that's, the Yankees aren't even playing the Blue Jays. No. So,
but he retired.
Yes.
Like everybody, anybody growing up in the media business knows John Sterling and his famous call, "The Yankees win." Right?
Right, exactly.
Anyways.
We got this text saying, don't be too cocky, gentlemen. I'm not being cocky. All we're saying is the Canucks should take care of business. As long as they take care of business, they should be fine. Yeah. But that means they have to play well. The only way you lose is if you don't play to your level. And that's what we're saying. As long as the Canucks play to their level, they should be fine. But you have to match that level. If they don't meet their level, they can lose the series,
and
right?
That's why it would be very disappointing for them to lose this series, as we talked about. And you can go back and listen to the shows last week, last Friday, when we were teeing up the series. From my perspective, my mind hasn't changed on that. This series comes down to the Canucks, and their ability to win it is all on them. If they play their game, they shouldn't have a problem getting past the Nashville Predators. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You are listening to Canuck Central.